Wow, okay. So, okay, maybe we'll extend past 6 weeks then. I'll see how it goes. Okay, so we are still, the topic is still relevant, kind of hoping that we would just shift gears to regular tefillah stuff. The topic is relevant. I think that the temperature has come down a little bit, but that's because we're waiting to see what's next. Certainly things have heated up on college campuses, that is for certain, and in many places in America and around the world. So certainly it is as important as ever to continue our discussion of davening for tefillah. So this will be the second half of this unit to discuss how and where we pray for something like a war. Where do we do that? What are we supposed to be talking about now? So last week we discussed Tehillim, which seems to be the go-to, seems to be the knee-jerk, is that we go to Tehillim. And we suggested last week a couple of different approaches to why Tehillim work, especially if the words don't seem to match up with what we're looking for right now. We can pretend there are certainly psukim that really hit the money, really hit the mark, but in many cases it doesn't seem to match. So we suggested perhaps it's a special type of Torah study. Didn't really get into that very far. There are sources that support that as well. David HaMelech turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at one point and seems to ask, according to the Medrash, that the study of Tehillim be similar to the study of some of the most difficult areas of Halacha. Strange, but that was one approach. On the opposite extreme, we suggested in the name of Rav Pinkus that it's really not about understanding the words. It's about using the words as weapons, as dynamite, that we're actually saying the actual words that David HaMelech wrote down. He joins us in our tefillah. The power of his words functions on our behalf when we say them. And if we don't understand what we're saying, it's really okay, because this is very powerful, powerful words that we're wielding. And then finally, we suggested that some understanding of what we're doing is really the key to Tehillim, and that Tehillim is ultimately about emunah. Whether it's a song of praise, whether it's a psalm at a time of crisis, the theme throughout all of Tehillim is our emunah, our bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that it focuses us on the fact that we need him. And the more we recognize that we need him, the more that we turn to him, even if the words don't match exactly, but the more we turn to him with faith, the more we can hope to receive from him. And we ended with an interesting mashal of Rav Pinkus. Rav Pinkus, who suggested that when we're supposed to stand as a poor person at the door, there are different types of people that come to our door. There are the people who just are looking for a small handout. They figure they basically got it covered. They know that the whole neighborhood could give them. And they're looking for $180, maybe $360. And you give them $180. Sometimes we approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu in such a way, in such a fashion. We also want his help. We think we basically got it covered. We think basically the army has it covered. We think basically we'll be okay. But you know what? If he'll put in his 2 cents, that would be helpful for us. Keep us in mind, Ribono Shel Olam. That's one type of poor person who stands at the door. Then there's a poor person who we usually get annoyed at, who wants or needs something more. Whether they tell us they need to get involved in their case, or even the poor person who, when they look at the check, they say, that's not enough. Hate when people do that, right? What do you mean it's not enough? I can't take it. I've even had people hand me back the check or the money. That's not enough. If it works for them, it works for them. When it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we need to be that kind of poor person. We need to be that. Because when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a compliment. It's not an insult. When we take the check and we turn it back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we, like Moshe Rabbeinu did so many times, said, no, that's not good enough. That's not enough. And the saying, the recitation of Tehillim, which pounds into our mind again and again and again, that everything is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We need him for everything. We need him completely. So that serves to open up the channels and allow him to give us. He will give us what we ask for, at best. if we ask for a small donation, this is certainly a rule in fundraising, never ask for less. You're never going to get more than, it happened once or twice in my fundraising career that I said $50,000 and someone said, no, I'll give you $100,000. And I fainted and they had to call Hatzalah, and that's not the way it usually works, right? You at most, you're going to get what you ask for. So when we ask for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have to ask for everything. And then we'll see what he's able or is proper at that moment to receive. But I want to move this week past the recitation of Tehillim, because as we pointed out last week, sometimes we put too much stock into the prayers that we offer after davening or in addition to davening, and therefore downplay what we do in davening itself. And I suggested last week, and I hope you tried this week, it certainly was helpful for me, that every time we say a chapter of Tehillim, every time we say Ashrei, Ashrei is David HaMelech's perhaps finest work. We are wielding those weapons. We're wielding that dynamite. We don't have to wait till after davening to use the power of Tehillim. But it goes beyond that. It certainly goes way beyond that. There is no doubt that the most powerful opportunity that we have to talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in the Amidah, is in the Shemoneh Esrei, whether we daven once a day, whether we daven three times a day. That experience goes well beyond anything that we can do outside of the Shemoneh Esrei. And so I want to focus a little bit on that this morning, to talk about what the Shemoneh Esrei is, just in brief, maybe in other sessions as we continue we'll dig down further, but just as an introduction, what the Shemoneh Esrei is, and beyond that, where is the proper place in Shemoneh Esrei? Many people have been asking, where should I be davening in Shemoneh Esrei? Can I insert my own words? Is there a bracha or more than one bracha that makes sense? And that's what we'll try to accomplish today. Many of you, I assume, have experienced the 3D immersive experience of the Beis HaMikdash that they have by the Kotel. They also have in the Museum of Music. I'm not really sure why it's there, but okay, great. I saw it in both places. I'm so fascinated by it. I'm fascinated by the Beis HaMikdash. And that experience for me, other than making me a little bit dizzy, it's a little something. But once I got over the seasickness of the whole thing, I found it fascinating. And I could go through that 100 times. 100 times. Because the fact is, first of all, you just keep looking around. You're immersing, you're in the Beis HaMikdash. You could keep looking around. There's so many things to see. And every time you go through that experience, it uplifts you, which is a good sign. Because every time we go, we're going to go to the Beis HaMikdash, it's supposed to uplift us. It's not a want, it's not a sight that you see and you check off. Oh, now I've seen the Beis HaMikdash. There's something about it that's supposed to uplift us. Imagine for a moment that, you know, you never know what's going on there at the Kotel. Every time you come, it looks like they're doing something else. They're building something, whatever, this and that. So imagine that you come and there's someone outside selling you tickets to a picture, to an actual walkthrough of the third Beis HaMikdash. An actual walkthrough of the third Beis HaMikdash. Not a VR kind of thing, not a virtual reality thing, but there's a line. You say, what's this line for? What's going on? Well, there's an actual tour of the third Beis HaMikdash. Okay. Listen, Israelis are very creative. There's got to be some way to do this. I don't know what's going to happen. Am I going to make trouble if I go up on the Har HaBayis? Anyway, you proceed through this thing, and you suddenly find yourself in front of a building that looks like the Beis HaMikdash. Pretty impressive. So you go and you stand there in what's called the Ezrat Nashim. The Ezrat Nashim, the Beis HaMikdash looked like a digital 8, right? And the first half was called the Ezrat Nashim. It wasn't just for women, but women could also be there. Eventually, they made the first mechitza for the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. It wasn't right. The men and the women were dancing. So mixed dancing is the cause of many things in Jewish history. So they had a section called the Ezrat Nashim. You come to the Ezrat Nashim, and very impressive. This is really something. You can't believe it looks so real. You're trying to figure out what's going on here. Your guide is explaining what all the different rooms are. You're walking around. You touch one of the pillars. It really feels like the real thing. Okay. Turns your attention to the far end, the Beis HaMikdash goes from east to west. We're used to thinking, because we've been in Golos for so long, that holy things are east, right? But holy things are west. That's where the Shechina is. So you go from east to west, and you're walking, and then they introduce you. They see there's a number of steps. There looks like about 15, and there are Leviim with instruments, an incredible band. An incredible band is there, and they're playing, and it seems to be just so amazing. And you say, wow, this was the rare tourist thing that was really worth the price of admission. And you're very excited, and you say, thank you very much. And the guide says, no, come. Okay. Looking around, I'm not really sure. I know that you can only go in certain places of the Beis HaMikdash, right? So, but you're looking around, as you do in a restaurant, you're not really sure if it's kosher, and you're looking to see other yarmulkes in there. Well, people look for them. Other people in the tour, they show you this enormous door called the Door of Nicanor, the Gate of Nicanor, these enormous copper doors, very impressive, and the guide keeps telling you to go further. You step beyond that gate, and you see there's an enormous mizbeach, enormous. The Mizbeach, we always think of a Mizbeach as something here about the size of a bima in shul. The Mizbeach was 20 feet high. There was a huge ramp. You go in and you see, as you probably saw in that VR, but it looks like much more than VR. And there are people, and they're kohanim, and there's a lot of blood, and a lot of animals and things, and everybody's very busy. You see people bowing down on the floor. And the guide says, come, do you want to come next to the Mizbeach? And somebody raises their hand and say, I don't think we're allowed to go there. That's just for Kohanim. I mean, you can't bring this whole group over there next to the Mizbeach. A Yisrael is allowed to come about 20 feet into the Azara, 20 feet in there, but no further than that. He says, no, it's okay. You can come. You come in and you're standing next to the Mizbeach. You're amazed. And then he starts walking towards this building. The inside. Much of what happened in the Beit HaMikdash was outside, but there's a few things that were inside. And he brings you inside. And now you're starting to feel very, very uncomfortable. And everybody's kind of looking around and says, who's the rabbi here? People start checking out on their phone. They start texting people, right? Everybody's trying to get Rabbi Leibowitz. Well, can I go in here? What's the halacha? What should I do? Right? Very strange. You go in, there's this enormous ceiling, 60 feet high. 60 feet high ceiling, and you see the menorah, you see a small incense altar, you see the bread, you can't believe the smell, and you're at the same time wondering if you're allowed to be there in the first place, if this is the end of your spiritual journey, and how you can experience something like this. It's unbelievable. And then he motions you to come behind the curtain. And you find, and he says, come on, everybody, I want to push you towards the front. And you're very interested. Now you're standing right in front of the Aron. And you see the Aron. You're in the Holy of Holies. And you're standing in front of the Aron. And you can't believe that you're there. And you turn around just to make sure that guy with the big yarmulke, who seems to be saying it's okay. And then you realize there's nobody else there. You're standing alone in the Holy of Holies, in front of the Aron, in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Yaakov Emden says, that's what happens every morning when we daven Shacharis. Every single morning when we daven Shacharis. This is not some Kabbalistic idea. It is based on Kabbalah, but the Mishnah Brura says that a person should view themselves when they're davening the Shemona Esrei as if they're standing alone in the Holy of Holies talking to God. Now, by the way, that's a pretty inspiring image. We often don't know what we're supposed to be thinking about. What should we envision? Most of the time, I'm not thinking about anything. I'm thinking about what I'm having for breakfast after I have the Shemona. But assuming I'm in the zone, assuming I'm thinking, what am I supposed to be thinking? What am I supposed to be imagining? Standing, what would it feel like to stand alone in the Holy of Holies? That's what the experience is. The Shacharis, which is really in many ways the primary, the prototypical prayer, consists of four sections. Four sections. The first is the saying of Karbanos. And if there's enough of a vote for that, maybe we'll talk about that. Women usually are not into the saying of Karbanos, which is fine. Men are not into the saying of Karbanos. But there's, it is absolutely inspiring, the sections of the Karbanos. But the first section has to do with the a few of the brachos and the Karbanos. Then we say Psukei Dezimra. Then we say the brachos of Kriya Shema. And then we finally end up at the Amidah. The Arizal explained that there are really four worlds that separate us from the Ribono Shel Olam. There are four spiritual worlds. If you can imagine HaKadosh Baruch Hu being purely spiritual, and this world being pretty material and physical, and there being four worlds in between us. The highest world called Atzilut in mysticism, Atzilut from the word Eitzel, to be very, very close to God. And every day, when we proceed through Karbanos, Psukei Dezimra, Shema, and then the Shemoneh Esrei, we move from the physical world. That's why it starts with Karbanos, with animals, with flour. Right? It moves to our description of what? Of the physical world, all the praises of Psukei Dezimra. We move out of the most earthly kind of things. Then we start with the praises of the angels. That's what the Berachos of Kriya Shema. And then we end up there. And these correspond to moving further and further into the Mikdash. Just as the Mikdash has all of these different places, all of these different zones, so too as we go through Shacharis. Are people really thinking about this when they get saved? Probably not. But again, if we want to talk about it, we can maybe make that one of the sessions. But certainly when we arrive at the final destination, when we're standing there in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have to realize the opportunity that's been afforded us. A human being who is not the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur is standing right there in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Holy of Holies, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is kiviyachol saying, what do you need from me today? Each one of us is told that we have the Ribono Shel Olam's full attention. Just wants to know what we need when we're about to, when we approach him. I mentioned this in some of my shiurim, that I try to actually introduce myself to Hashem, not with words, because there are places where one can and can't talk when one gets so close to the Shemoneh Esrei. But before I say Hashem Sfatai Tiftach Ufi Agiti Latecha, open up my mouth, I often take a moment to try to focus, to take a second. I take my three steps forward and I stop for a second. I try to orient myself. I have just walked into HaKadosh Baruch Hu's space. I have just walked into his office. So, something you can use if you've ever been, everyone has been, in a doctor's office, right? We know that feeling in the waiting room where you're kind of waiting around and you keep busy. I'm a little bit of a workaholic and a multitasker, so when I go to the doctor's office, I have a mobile office there. I have my Wi-Fi and everything. I have papers around. So I'm sitting there. I'm not looking at Channel 1 News and New York 1. I have the entire thing going. And I completely fade, space out, because it could be an hour, it could be 2 hours, it could be whatever. And then there's that moment where the person comes out of the door and they keep calling names, right? That person with the clipboard, they come out. And then eventually they say, Penner. And I quickly take all my papers together and everything, and I put it in my bag, and I come rushing through the door. I sometimes do that for a moment before I start the Shemoneh Esrei. Penner, it's your time to be alone with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's your time to talk to him. It's your time to have his full attention. The fact that we have trouble understanding that is because we're used to dealing with humans. Humans have only a limited amount of attention. The Ribono Shel Olam, there's nothing about the Ribono Shel Olam that would make us believe that he can't be completely zoned in, much more than anyone, even before phones, could be zoned in and listening to us. Just tell me, mein Kind, tell me, my child, what is it that you want? We dare not miss that opportunity. We dare not miss that opportunity. He's asking us to bring him into our lives. He's asking us what we want. So it is wonderful to use Tehillim after we have left his office. the process of moving away from Shmoneh Esrei, the tefillos that occur after Shmoneh Esrei, which again, people don't pay very much attention to, and the order of those tefillos, especially in Nusach Sfard, which is heavily based in the Ari and Kabbalah, the order of the prayers that we say at the end, Ashrei Uvalitzion, Shir Shoyom, Aleinu, Pita Maktoris, with all those pieces are actually a backing away through those worlds to come back to Earth. And again, it's so ironic that we get all the way outside, we come back to the guy at the front booth, and then we say, oh, by the way, I have something to tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now you have something to tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You were standing, you took this tour, you were standing alone in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now you want to, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is everywhere, and we can talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at every time, and we have to, but we dare not miss that opportunity. So where and how and what do we say? So let me make a few quick suggestions today as to what we might do. The first, I was told there need to be sources. So let's learn it inside. Let's take a look at this. This is a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Why it's in Avodah Zarah is a longer question. We know the Gemara sometimes just goes from idea to idea, almost train of thought. Of course, there are deeper ideas, but the Gemara in Avodah Zarah discusses where can I insert my own thoughts into Shmoneh Esrei?
Which one is it?
I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Excellent. The back of page one, just page two, where it says insertion of requests into the Amidah. So the first thing, oh, we'll put this up also. Yeah, that doesn't work. Yes, it's on the last week. There are also extra copies from last week on the table outside. Okay, so the first thing we can do, if we really don't know how to navigate the Shmoneh Esrei fully, is to simply ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for things in our own words. People are reluctant to do that. I am constantly asked, am I allowed to ask in English? Am I allowed to ask here? Am I allowed to ask there? You'd be surprised what the primary source says about our ability to just talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our own words. The Gemara there brings a number of different opinions. The first opinion, Avodah Zarah Zayin Amud Beis, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Shoel Adam Tzrachav Ve'achar Kach Yitpalel. Rabbi Eliezer says that the best place, and he doesn't say exactly where this is, but you should speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu before you daven the Amidah. Not exactly clear where, because you can't really interrupt right between Ga'al Yisrael and the Amidah. Okay, great. Let's make it bigger. Okay? Rabbi Yeshua says the opposite. Rabbi Yeshua says Yitpalel ve'achar kach shoel tzurachav. Okay? Rabbi Yeshua says, no, you should first pray, you should first say your Amidah, and then whatever you want to add at the end, you could say. They have one thing in common. Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, the first two opinions in the Gemara say, don't put your own words into the Shmoneh Esrei itself. What might be the reason that they feel that way? Well, first of all, it could probably interrupt the flow. But even simpler than that, okay, interesting. Maybe people will stop saying the real words. They'll just take the opportunity to speak to Hashem. But others suggest it's simply that this is a masterpiece. Would you imagine putting your own little ditty in the middle of Beethoven's Fifth? I mean, this is PDQ Bach, and those of you who know that, it's funny, they do that, but that's not something that you do except for humor. This was, the Shmoneh Esrei was written by 120 rabbis. So first of all, the fact that the Anshei Knesset HaGadola, which consisted of 120 sages, the fact, first of all, that 120 rabbis agreed on anything, that's one of the greatest miracles of Jewish history. So it's a miraculous prayer. But beyond that, the Jerusalem Talmud tells us that 80 of those 120 were prophets. The Babylonian Talmud says they were also prophets. The Jerusalem Talmud, which was closer to the occasion and the time, says 80 of the 120 were, you needed 80 Nevi'im to make this text. So what is Penner speaking in English in the middle of something that was composed by 80 prophets and 40 great rabbis? That seems to be, I think, the simplest way to understand Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, whether you say it beforehand, whether you say it afterhand, but don't touch the masterpiece. The Chachamim Omrim, the third opinion, lo chadivrei zeh v'lo chadivrei zeh, ela shoel adam tzrachav b'shomea tefillah. The Chachamim, the majority opinion, say it's not true. You can add your own words, and you're welcome to add your own words to the Shmona Esrei, seemingly in one particular bracha. The bracha of Shomea Tefillah. Okay? Shomea Tefillah. Okay? Shema Koleinu. Shema Koleinu, Shomea Tefillah. That bracha doesn't seem to have a very particular theme. It's just God listen to us and answer our prayers. The other, the previous 12 brachot, the previous 12 requests for knowledge, for tshuva, for health, for bringing together the exiles, all those seem to have particular themes. The rabbis seem to, according to the Chachamim, have created a bracha that's like a catch-all. It doesn't have a particular theme. It's open, it's bland, it's vanilla. And you can add whatever you'd like to that bracha in your own words. And seemingly in your own language. And you can feel free to do that in Shomea Tefillah to ask for whatever it is that you want. But it goes further. Because the Gemara continues and says, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, right? Rav Yehuda says that Shmuel says the halacha is that a person requests his own needs who listens to prayer. The first opinion comes and says, how do we paskin? Do we hold like the rabbis who say, don't touch the Shmona Esrei? Or do we hold like the majority opinion, which we usually do, that no, you could talk to God in English, your own words, your own thoughts, you could do that in the middle of Shomea Tefillah. He says, no, we hold like the third opinion. But then, Amar Rav Yehuda Bereder Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas Mishmei Derav, although the sages said, look in English, that a person requests his own needs in the blessing ending who listens to prayer, that is not the only option. Rather, if he wishes to recite at the conclusion of each and every blessing personal requests that reflect the nature of each and every blessing, he may recite them. The halacha is, and the Shulchan Aruch categorizes this, that one is allowed to ask in English, in your own words, in any of the certainly middle brachot, the request brachot of Shmona Esrei. Now, we often do this in one bracha, right? In Refa'enu. Pretty common, and there's actually a formula that you can use in the Siddur, Yehi Ratzon, that you could use that. You don't have to, but you can use that. But you should know the Gemara paskins and the Shulchan Aruch paskins that this is available to us in any one of the middle brachot. So we shouldn't feel we're limited to just Shema Koleinu. We shouldn't feel we're limited to after davening or outside of davening in any one of the brachot. In fact, there are many who say we should be introducing our own tefillos in English in many of the brachot. Now, this may take a while. But it doesn't mean the Shmona Esrei isn't necessarily the place to take out one's Tehillim list of cholim and go through 400 chol. But the things closest to my heart. Why does it make sense that we should be adding to these brachot? So some suggest, you know, if I can't add anything to the bracha, I'm probably not paying much attention to it. Right? There are brachos which are harder to know what to throw in there. Right? When we request the restoration of judges. Hard to know. I just got a parking ticket. During judicial reform, fascinating. You know, I gave a shiur on this because I always use that as the example of the bracha that least speaks to me. And friends started calling me from Israel and said, judicial reform is an interesting step of the Geula. Starts with bringing the Jews together, and then it goes to judicial reform, and then it goes to destruction of our enemies. Interesting. An interesting series of events in the second half of the Shmona Esrei. But, okay. But certainly the brachos, where I ask for knowledge, I ask to be able to make good decisions. The bracha of Chanein Adas is really not about book knowledge. It's about the ability to make good decisions. If we're actually in that bracha, there probably are one or two things that we want to ask for. If we're actually in the bracha of slicha u'mechila, we could certainly think of something we've done wrong that we should ask for. These are snippets. These are not long techinot, these are not long lists of things, but they're snippets. In Shema Kolenu, actually, it is appropriate to get a little bit longer, to stop for a minute and to think, what is it that I need from HaKadosh Baruch Hu today? What do we need as a people from HaKadosh Baruch Hu today? It's certainly appropriate to say in your own world, please keep Achenu B'nai Yisrael all around the world, especially on the front lines in Eretz Yisrael, please keep them safe. Free the hostages. These are all things we can ask for. But it shouldn't be limited to that. It can include whatever's going on in my family and in my life. Things that happen to us so that we will bring them to Hashem. Our lives are a series of events that occur so that we can bring it back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, I could use a little bit of help with this. We'll talk about that more at length, please God, in this series. But we have the ability, the first thing to understand is that the Shemoneh Esrei is wide open for our own requests in English to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And you can do so in Shema Kolenu. If it matches with the theme of one of the other brachot, you can put it right in there. And also, if you feel more comfortable, or if you find that, you know, you're just there for too long, you can do so for after the Shemoneh Esrei as well. But certainly those avenues are open, and it is more powerful to speak to God before we take those three steps back than at any part in the day. We are standing in the Holy of Holies, and he's saying, tell me what you want. Give me your list of things that you need. That's the time to do that. However, it's impossible that Chazal did not include these themes in the Shemoneh Esrei itself. There may be things that happen in my life that are difficult to figure out exactly which one of the brachos do I add it in. I throw it into Shema Kolenu because I'm not really sure that any of the other themes that come up exactly meet it. I don't feel comfortable. Okay. But where in the Shemoneh Esrei do we speak of the need to be saved from our enemies? Do we pray for the downfall of our enemies? The answer might not be what you think. So 99 out of 100 people will say, V'lam al-shinim. If you have a sitter, and you don't really need a sitter for a very short thing here, V'lam al-shinim al-tehi tikva. What are lam al-shinim? What are mal-shinim? What? The ones who talk about us. Okay, now, the fact is, this week, that is very, very relevant. That may not have been the original Malshinim, but one can have that Kavana this week, that the people who are saying bad things about Israel and Jews should not have a hope. Right? V'chol harish'a kerega toved. And all of the evil should disappear in a minute. V'chol oyvei amcha mehera yikaresu. And all the enemies of your people should be quickly destroyed and cut off. V'hazedim, and the people who do it on purpose, the people who are excited to kill us, the people who revel in our murder, mehera te'akeru, te'shaberu, te'mager, v'tachnia b'mehera. I mean, all of those words reply cutting down, destroying, and making sure they are not just gone.
Obliterated.
Not just obliterated, specifically crushed, which is a very interesting image. Usually in a war, we don't speak of crushing our enemy in a physical sense. We may speak of that in a proverbial sense, that we hope that we will crush them. But it's a fascinating reading of this particular bracha. This seems to speak very powerfully to exactly what's going on today. And on some level, this is a bracha we should be focusing on. If we miss it, we always have Shema Kolenu, and there may be things we want to say in Shema Kolenu in addition. The hostages are not mentioned specifically in this bracha, and there's so much on our mind. But this bracha speaks very powerfully, depending on how we think about the words, to the situation today.
So wasn't this bracha added, and it was for the seduced?
Yes.
Right.
So the truth is that this bracha was added for the Sadducees. For the Malshinim, the worst enemies are sometimes our own people. And this bracha was added later to the Shmona Esrei. If you go to the next source, the Rambam, now it's the third page. Bimei Rabban Gamliel Rabu Ha'apikorsin BeYisrael. In the days of Rabban Gamliel, the numbers of heretics amongst the Jews increased. They would oppress the Jews and entice them to turn away from God. That's not really what's going on right now. Since he saw this, Rabbi Gamliel saw this as the greatest need of the people. It was an existential crisis for the Jewish people at the time. He and his court established one blessing that contains a request to God to destroy the heretics. So while it's perfectly fine to have in mind when I'm saying that those who malign us should have no hope. Of course, I always think of not only hope, but hatikva, right? Those who malign us, right? And then to think of hatikva. And it's perfectly valid to think of that when we say this bracha. We have to recognize that it's not exactly designed for this particular situation. Okay? It does work. Hopefully it works, right? Hopefully it works. But I just want to be fair and talk about that. Yes. Well, we'll get to that next. That's a better choice, if you ask me. That's what we're going to get to, okay? Now, this bracha has four requests, okay? V'lamalshinim al tehitikva, stop. V'chol harisha kareget toved, stop. V'chol oivei amcha mehera yikaresu, stop. V'hazeidim, etc., stop. What are the four different requests? So the Sfarim write, in our Mimcha Elokei HaMelech, right? Yeah. I recommended a book last week, and the rabbi went out and bought it really quickly. So he recommends, I don't know if I can look it up now, but this is the Sefer, by the way, on understanding what the brachos mean in the Shmoneh Esrei. It's not the simplest Sefer, but it, our Mimcha Elokei HaMelech, unbelievable. So he says, there are four different things we're praying for. Two are about Jews, and two are about non-Jewish nations. Two are different kinds of Jews who persecute us from inside. And the last two phrases are those who persecute us from the outside, one referring to the Christian world and one referring to the Muslim world. The last phrase about crushing and ultimately getting rid of is about Malchut Yishmael. That's the way it's understood, the bracha. So on the one hand, it's very, very appropriate, and it's almost eerie, it almost makes your hair stand on it to realize how relevant it is. But let's be fair that the real reason why the bracha was inserted was to talk about heretics and people of that nature. There's another reason, however, why this bracha may or may not be the appropriate place to pray right now. Okay? Where is he saying? No, it's in a different... He goes through each time... Oh, here it is. Sorry. Thank you. The first phrase is Jews who have left Judaism because they just got confused. Nebuch. The second is Jews who fight against us. Lahachis. They particularly hate. And then it goes to the other two empires. But there's another reason why this bracha might or might not be the perfect place to pray. And that has to do with the overall structure of the middle brachot of Shmoneh Esrei, which will start this week. And please God, we'll continue with next week. Probably won't get to Ga'al Yisrael. I see our next speaker is already here to talk about Ga'al Yisrael perhaps next week. I don't remember whether those who we got to learn with a couple of years ago, we did this exercise, but it's a longer idea. But the 12, just to put it on one foot, the 12 brachos of Shmoneh Esrei, the 12 middle brachos, which eventually were expanded to 13, are units of brachos. It's not just 12 wishes, or 13 wishes, just in some kind of an order. There are some very, very specific guidelines for what comes first and what comes next and which bracha is next to which bracha, et cetera, et cetera. That has to be, because if it took 80 prophets and 120 rabbis total to make this thing up, the depth of this bracha is going to be way beyond. It's not just, oh, what's important? I don't know, here, let's, They did like one of those conferences where you put the sticky notes up here. What should the 12 themes be? This guy said that. Come on. There's got to be a tremendous amount of meaning and structure and significance to everything about it. The simplest breakdown of the middle brachos of Shmoneh Esrei is between personal requests and national requests. Requests for the needs of the individual and requests for the needs of the nation. That's the simplest way to understand it. The first six brachos, I request understanding, I request the ability to do tshuva, I request the ability to be forgiven, I request something in Ga'al Yisrael, whatever. No one knows what that bracha is really about. I request health and I request wealth. We say them in plural. We say them in plural, but don't be confused. We're speaking about everyone's individual needs. We're not speaking about the health of the Jewish people as a metaphysical entity. We're talking about doctor stuff. But we pray not only for me. Once I'm thinking about my own needs, I should pray for my fellow Jew. But the first six brachos are brachos that deal with the needs of individuals, and every individual should have. I shouldn't be the only one with wealth. Every Jew should have wealth. The second half deals with needs of the nation, to be brought together, to have a just society, to get rid of our enemies, to establish a society where the tzaddikim get their due, where the righteous actually is no more tzaddik v'ralo, the establishment of Yerushalayim, the coming of Mashiach, and so on. If that were the only way to understand the two parts of the Shmoneh Esrei, then I think this would be the perfect place to put a bracha to defeat Hamas. It's not a need of every individual. This is an existential need for the Jewish nation and the state of Israel, etc. However, and not every sefer, depending on their views on what the significance of the founding of the state of Israel, will say this in exactly this way. But it's not simply that the second half of the Shmoneh Esrei is about the needs of the nation. It's that it is clearly a step-by-step recipe for the ultimate geula. It's not simply that these are things the nation needs. They are all focused on stages of the ultimate geula. That's why it starts with Mekabetz Nidchei Amo Yisrael, the bringing back of the Jewish people to Israel. It's not just that the Jewish people have needs as a nation. It's pretty clear. And by the way, there are sources that would seem to indicate that the Beis HaMikdash is just going to drop out of the sky one day without us doing anything beforehand. But if you just look at the Shmoneh Esrei, it does seem to support the Tzioni idea that there are going to be stages to this process. That first there's going to be an ingathering of the exiles, and then we move to try and establish a just society. And then there's some kind of war that our enemies are defeated once and for all. And then bad things stop happening to good people. And then Yerushalayim is fully built up, and then Mashiach comes, and then Shema Kolena, whatever that is. So it's not simply that the first half of the brachos are personal needs, and the second half are national needs. It's that those national needs are expressed as the unfolding of our national redemption. That, by the way, is fascinating in and of itself. A, it looks like the national redemption is going to unfold. B, if it was up to me, I would just have made one bracha at the end and bring Mashiach. It seems like the stages themselves are valuable, and it seems that when I get up in the morning, and if I would list my top 10 things I'm going to ask God for, I would never have thought of taking half of them for the stages of the unfolding of the national destiny of the Jewish people. I need this, I could use a new car, I could use this, I could use that. I have 9 brachos, and then, of course, I'm not just, they should bring Mashiach. We waste, for those of you listening on tape, I'm making those hand signal things, we waste half of our brachos on the stages of the unfolding of the national redemption of the Jewish people. What is that? Obviously, it's a lot more important than we think it is. At the same time, It means that the things that we request in the second half of the Shemoneh Esrei, like V'lam Alshinim, as perfect as it seems, are not simply that we defeat our enemies and that we are safe, but we defeat our enemies once and for all, crushing them as part of the final redemptive process of the Jewish people. Do we hope that that is what's going on in Israel right now? It's as good as any other time in our lives to believe that such a thing is unfolding. I was just sent this morning a news article by a completely, completely unreliable source that someone got up in the Italian parliament and suggested returning the temple vessels to Jerusalem. Okay. Again, today there really aren't any reliable news sources to begin with. So that's as good as the BBC or CNN saying it. The Jewish whatever schmooze is about the same thing. But the point is, I think we all have a sense that we're living in a very historic time and that this could be something. This could be it. This could be it. And that we need to be on our best behavior and we need to do everything that we can. This could be something beyond. At the same time, we have to be realistic that what we're really praying for right now is that the defeat of Hamas, the ability for Israelis and us, soon Israelis, to be able to just be there safely and to continue slowly, slowly the process of redemption, not the final downfall of all of our enemies. So while the bracha of Olam Hashinim is very appropriate and we should be focusing on it and we should be putting our own meaning, there's nothing wrong with putting your own meaning into these words, even if we know that V'lam Alshinim was originally the heretics and their attempts to convert Jews away from Judaism, even if we know that that's what the bracha originally meant, there's absolutely nothing wrong with thinking of those who are protesting on the campuses, who are V'lam Alshinim. They're saying things that are just false about us and about the state of Israel. That's good, and that's where you should focus. But we still need to go one step further next week. Okay? We're going to look at the bracha of Ga'al Yisrael, which is in the first half, and does seem to be more about anti-Semitism, enemies, safety, etc. So you can already start to think a little bit, read a little bit about that bracha this week. But then I'm going to try to share with you an even simpler way that we can all use the Shemoneh Esrei to daven for Achenu B'nai Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael.